other people. And when you have states that are pushing English only, that are anti-immigrant, I mean, we have saw a loss, a significant loss of students with people moving into other states once Arizona had made the statement through English only laws that we were anti-immigrant. Now that sentiment is across our entire nation. I mean, I have Border Patrol that drive right up and down my way home, every mile marker, sitting there waiting for what? Looking for who? People that look like me, that look like workers, that have an accent, and they are literally kidnapping people off the streets. So what we are seeing play out on television is happening in real time. And as the representative for this community that has three ports of entry with Mexico, it is critically important for me and our voice to be present when these conversations are happening and when solutions are being created to this problem that Trump and this Republican Party have exacerbated throughout our nation.
Congressmember Rokana, what about these National Guard deployments and governors from Oregon to Illinois saying that President Trump is breaking the law and bringing them in unsolicited? What role does Congress play in all of this?
They're unconstitutional, but they're also cruel. I mean, when you're looking at raids that are parading on the streets, half-naked children, when you have raids that are separating kids, snatching them away from their mothers, when you have the harassment of not just women and children, but American citizens, the American people have been horrified. And what we have to understand is that Trump is going to keep pushing the envelope. If we don't stand up, he may say, let's have ICE agents outside the polls before an election. This is an attempt to intimidate and harass people of color in this country, people who are the children of immigrants in this country. And we need to stand up. Justice Kavanaugh has said that it's okay to profile someone if they're Latino and if they're in a low-income occupation. Literally, he wrote that in an opinion. So this is a time where we need to be out there on the No Kings marches. If you've come out to a No Kings march, please bring someone else. The Democratic Party needs to be the leader of a democracy movement. We need to be more than just doing our votes and our jobs. We all need to participate in leading a movement to stand up for democracy and the dignity and rights of people who are seeing it violated.
And Congressman Khan, I wanted to ask you about the Trump administration's attacks on the press, the multi-million-dollar lawsuits that he has filed against various media organizations, the attempts to use the FCC to investigate some of the TV broadcast companies. Your sense of what is happening to the media in America under this administration?
It's been the largest assault on the freedom of the press in modern history. It's why independent media like yours is so very important at this time. But you've not just had the attack on Jimmy Kimmel or the attack on left-wing groups who are quote-unquote anti-American or anti-capitalist, that according to the NPSM7 memo that they have, you have a dangerous consolidation of the media. You have them literally having rich billionaires buy up CBS. You have them having rich billionaires buy up TikTok, concerned about whether the TikTok algorithm had too much criticism of Israel and Netanyahu. I mean, anyone who read Chomsky about capital class controlling media often would say, well, is that really true? Well, look, Trump is trying to actually prove his thesis true. And it should be chilling to all Americans in terms of the corporate consolidation of the media to suppress viewpoints critical of our own government or foreign powers in the world. We all need to be standing up and speaking out for freedom of speech and freedom of the press.
Democratic Congressmember Ro Khanna, I want to thank you for being with us on Capitol Hill from Silicon Valley in California. And we want to thank Congressmember-elect Adelita Grijalva of Arizona. She won a special election last month, but has yet to be sworn in. She will be, if House Speaker Johnson allows her to be, the first Latina congressmember representing Arizona. Coming up, we look at the growing media empire of billionaire Trump ally Larry Ellison and his son David, who heads a newly formed Paramount Skydance. David Ellison has just installed Barry Weiss as the new head of CBS News in what's been described as a right-wing takeover of the network. Stay with us.
Someone's hiding in the bushes with a telephoto lens, while their editor assures them the means justifies the end. 'Cause we only hunt celebrities, it's all a bit of fun. But scousers never buy the sun. While the parents of the missing girl cling desperately to hope, and a copper takes improper payments in a thick brown envelope, and no one in the newsroom asks where's this headline from, but scousers never buy the sun.
Never Buy the Sun by Billy Bragg, performing in our Democracy Now! Studio. Yeah, he's British, but he could be talking about the Baltimore Sun and others. Well, we're going to talk about media ownership now. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Monday marked the first day on the job for the newly installed editor-in-chief of CBS News, Barry Weiss, after she sold her right-wing digital media outlet, The Free Press, to CBS's parent company, Paramount Skydance, for an astounding $150 million. Weiss is a former New York Times opinion writer who resigned in 2020, founded the Free Press, which is backed by prominent Silicon Valley venture capitalists, and has been widely criticized for its commentary on Gaza, including a piece headlined The Gaza Famine Myth, which questioned famine conditions in the besieged territory caused by Israel's assault and blockade. In her new role, Weiss will report to Trump ally, Paramount CEO David Ellison, who took control of Paramount through the merger with his company, Skydance Media. David is the son of one of the richest men in the world, recently declared the richest for a little bit, billionaire Larry Ellison, executive chair of Oracle, who Trump has proposed to make part owner of TikTok. The Ellison family is also set to make a bid for CNN's parent company, Warner Brothers Discovery, which would also include owning, for example, HBO. This all comes after the parent company of CBS News agreed in June to settle a $20 billion lawsuit brought by Trump, who objected to how CBS's News' 60 Minutes edited an interview with Kamala Harris. Paramount board chair and controlling shareholder Sherry Redstone reportedly sought the settlement to ensure the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, approved Paramount's bid to merge with Skydance Media. CBS also canceled The Late Show with Stephen Colbert starting next May after Colbert called the settlement a big, fat bribe. From all of this, we're joined by David Kleon, a columnist for The Nation, contributing editor at Jewish Currents. His piece for The Guardian is headlined, Disgruntled NYT Journalist to Anti-Woke Power Grab. How far can Barry Weiss go? David, welcome to Democracy Now! Thanks for joining us from Brooklyn. Why don't you start off by laying out the Ellison empire and then the significance of them installing Barry Weiss as head of CBS News?
Well, thanks for having me, Amy. So Larry Ellison, who briefly at least was the richest person in the world, in the last month or so. He was at least briefly ahead of Elon Musk. His son, David Ellison, is less is known about him, but he's a rising power in media. He founded Skydance, which is now merged with Paramount. Paramount, in addition to Paramount Hollywood Studios, owns CBS, obviously. It owns Viacom, which is Comedy Central and MTV. So it's a huge empire, and by all reports, Ellison is currently looking to acquire Warner Brothers and Discovery, which would give him control of CNN and HBO. So we're talking about an unprecedented level of media consolidation by an unprecedented level of wealth. Larry Ellison is a known Trump supporter. David Ellison is at least suspected to be, and both are known to be extremely fervent supporters of Israel. And David Ellison has gotten very close with Barry Weiss, who is very well known for being a fervent supporter of Israel, going back to her days at Columbia University 20 years ago, where she and I were both undergraduates at the same time. And where she gained a national reputation, even as an undergraduate, for campaigns she was running against Arab and Muslim professors there, who she and other students saw as too critical of Israel and as ideologically motivated in the classroom. Barry has presented herself as a champion of free speech, and I would say that her publication, The Free Press, claims to be centrally founded around free speech. But in reality, she has a 20-year history of suppressing speech that she finds objectionable, especially when it's speech championing the rights of Palestinians and criticizing the state of Israel. And the Free Press has been centrally involved in that. So with her becoming not so much the formal head of CBS News as Ellison's kind of personal enforcer outside the normal chain of command within the organization— it remains to be seen what she'll actually do, but many people, including me, are concerned that she will enforce a right-leaning ideology on the whole network and probably particularly on Israel coverage, where CBS has sometimes gone outside the bounds of what someone like Weiss would approve of, or for that matter, what Sherry Redstone, the previous owner, had approved of.
And could you talk about the Free Press? Most people around the country have never heard of it. Is it worth anywhere near $150 million that Skydance is paying for it?
$150 million, I think almost anyone would agree, is a very, very steep valuation. The Free Press was founded as a Substack called Common Sense by Barry Weiss and her wife, Nellie Bowles, and her sister, Susie Weiss, in, I believe, 2021, the year after Weiss resigned from the New York Times after the forced resignation of opinion editor James Bennett, which media savvy people may recall was over an op-ed that Bennett published by Senator Tom Cotton calling for military force against Black Lives Matter demonstrators. Weiss left in a public resignation letter saying that the Times was censorious and a hostile work environment, and she created the Common Sense initially as a place to sort of run letters by, you know, disgruntled private school parents about their kids' curriculums and stuff like that. But very quickly, it became it attracted support from venture capitalists like Mark Andreessen and David Sachs in Silicon Valley, who are open Trump supporters. And it was rebranded as the Free Press, and it attracted a staff of, I believe, something like 40 or 50 people now. So that's a real publication. Publicly, it's supposed to have around 170,000 paid subscribers and nearly 10 times that many total subscribers. So, you know, almost 90% of them are free, which is a pretty typical ratio, I think, for Substack-based media. And there are other Substack-based media companies like Zatea or The Bulwark that are very ideologically different from Weiss's. But the Free Press has been, I think, incredibly successful. But $150 million valuation is something else. People have run the numbers, and it's highly unlikely that the site's organic subscriber base could justify that. And given that the Ellisons have, for all intents and purposes, infinite money, and $150 million is pocket change for them, it's widely understood, I think, or should be widely understood, that this is an ideological power play by them. This is about turning Barry Weiss into—it's about elevating her political ideology over one of the most important and storied news brands in the United States.
And of course, you're talking about a news organization that had such luminaries of the media as Walter Cronkite, Mike Wallace, Edward R. Murrow, Fred Friendly. What's your sense of what the reporters in CBS are thinking these days?
Well, there have been numerous reports, always anonymously sourced, in which longtime CBS News insiders express panic and alarm. The general perception, some of it is ideological. Some of them think that, you know, Weiss is a propagandist, which she certainly is, for Israel and for the right. But there's also concerns about her expertise or her experience. You know, Weiss is 41 years old, same age as me. She has never worked in TV news before. She has never managed anything on that scale. Granted, as I said, she won't technically be managing. At least that's the impression I get from the reporting. She'll be picking select battles and interfering with the day-to-day work, which is run by a longtime media exec named Tom Sabrowski. But I think that there's a lot of panic at CBS. Now, a lot of that panic is also driven by, you know, the fact that there's a new owner, there's a merger, and basically everyone expects mass layoffs. TV news in general is in decline and mostly depends on older audiences, and CBS is no exception. So I think savvy industry observers think that Weiss has maybe been brought on to manage the decline of CBS, I would think, by purging voices that she and Ellison would disapprove of, and maybe bringing in voices they would approve of, but all, overall reducing its value as a news gathering organization.
A CBS correspondent.
And certainly it seems that many long...
A CBS correspondent told The Independent, the fact that we don't have money to pay journalists, but we have money to pay Barry Weiss between $100 and $200 million is indicative of what the Ellison's true goal here is. And it's not journalism. And this goes to David Klein, if you can wrap up with this. The significance of the role of Larry Ellison, this decades-long history of the Republican Party, frequented Trump's Mar-a-Lago for dinners, has met Trump in the Oval Office, also an ally of Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, donating money to Israel's military through the nonprofit Friends of the Israel Defense Forces. Can you summarize the significance of this as we wrap?
Well, I think that it has to be taken as of a piece with a general right-wing consolidation over media right now. I actually should—we would be remiss not to mention that Ellison and some of the venture capitalists who have backed Weiss, like Andreessen, are part of an effort to take over TikTok in the United States. TikTok, of course, is a Chinese social media platform that is wildly popular with younger Americans and has— been particularly important for promoting pro-Palestinian viewpoints and is perceived by Israel and by many people in the U.S. government as being responsible for why so many young Americans are turning against Israel. Of course, while that may be true to an extent, the real reason Americans are turning against Israel is because Israel is committing a genocide and is pretty unapologetic about doing so. But I think there's a hope from Netanyahu to Trump's people to Ellison and Weiss, that by controlling TikTok in the United States, they can probably skew the algorithm more toward Israeli Hasbarist propaganda. And I'm skeptical that will work, at least for changing entrenched opinions about Israel. But I think it's clearly part of the play here.
We want to thank you, David Klein, for being with us, columnist for The Nation and contributing editor at Jewish Currents. His piece for The Guardian, published last month, will link to disgruntled NYT journalist anti-woke power grab, How Far Can Barry Weiss Go? This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. For more on the state of American journalism, we look now at a new documentary streaming and airing on PBS called Stripped for Parts, American Journalism on the the brink. The film looks at how hedge funds like Alden Global Capital have gutted newsrooms across the country. Alden recently made headlines when Dallas Morning News shareholders rejected its takeover bid and voted instead to be acquired by the Hearst Corporation. This is the trailer of Strip for Parts.
Tomorrow will be the final edition of the Rocky Mountain News.
The last decade and a half, we've seen 1,800 newspapers disappear.
The Denver Post isn't dying. The Denver Post is being murdered.
Media is a food chain which would fall apart without local newspapers.
We've been hearing for the last decade or so that newspapers are dying, they're dinosaurs. Because of the internet, there's this bigger problem. There's an industry that's out to destroy newspapers and doing it deliberately.
Distressed investing is called vulture investing for a reason. They're feeding on a carcass of a company. They want to get in, make some money, and get out.
What hedge funds will tell you is this is creative destruction in capitalism.
We got bought by this mysterious company. Nobody even knew who they were. It was called Alden Global Capital, and it was a New York hedge fund. I said, you're an investigative reporter. Why don't you dig into Alden and just write about who they are and what they're doing, because people don't know.
I work for the bad guys. Now, when did that happen? When did I start working with the bad guys?
The Denver Post has launched a revolt against its owner, New York-based hedge fund Alden Global Capital.
A guy named Chuck Plunkett just decided he'd had enough.
It's either stand up and speak up now or write your own obituary in 2 or 3 years.
It's one of the most courageous things I've ever witnessed in a 40-year career in journalism.
We know from copious research that when a community loses a newspaper, voter participation goes down, corruption goes up.
There is misinformation out there. Communities are misinformed and uninformed, and that's really dangerous.
Somebody's got to cover this story to argue for the sanctity of facts and truth.
There are times in your life when you are thrust into a situation where are you going to stand up and risk everything, or are you going to back down?
Newspapers are not just any other business. They are the only private industry specifically named in the Bill of Rights.
History will not judge us kindly. If one day we wake up to realize we failed to protect our community's right to know, and in turn, our very democracy.
And that last voice, Julie Reynolds, a key researcher on Alden Global Capital and what's happened to newspapers in this country. That's the trailer for Strip for Parts, American Journalism on the Brink, streaming at PBS.org through the end of the year. We're joined right now by Rick Goldsmith. He is the producer and director of this documentary. That is chilling. He is in Oakland, California. He was also director of the Oscar nominated documentary, The Most Dangerous Man in America, Daniel Ellsberg, and the Pentagon Papers. Rick, this is a powerful documentary. You point out that since 2005, 2,500 newspapers have closed in this country. That's more than 120 newspapers on average closing a year. Talk about what's happening and its connection you focus on, Alden Global Capital.
Well, I think it's a counterpoint to what your previous story was on the national scale. This is on the local scale of journalism, with Alden Global Capital and other hedge funds having scarfed up newspapers. And what they do is they make money by selling off the assets and laying off the staff. And it's really crippling to local communities. And I think they knew that in Dallas. And that's one of the reasons why they rejected the bid by Alden Global Capital, because number one, you don't have local ownership. And number two, you have people who are interested solely in making money off of the newspapers and not in serving the community and doing good journalism.
And could you talk about the relationship, the real estate relationship of these attempts by groups like Alden Capital? For instance, Alden recently sold off the printing plant and also the offices of the New York Daily News for $90 million while refusing to bargain with the union members there.
Exactly right. This is, it's called distressed asset investing. That is their MO. And what that means is they buy these distressed industries. They might be in bankruptcy for a song. That's number one. Number two is they sell off the biggest assets, which tend to be the newsrooms, which tend to be centrally located in downtown, and the printing presses, as you mentioned. And then number three is they cut back the staff as far as they can. And now they've got it three ways. Cheap property and low expenses, and they can make money and keep it going for a while, but the journalism is what suffers.
I want to go to another clip from your documentary, Stripped for Parts, that features journalist Julie Reynolds describing her investigation of Alden Global Capital.
I really need visuals to help me understand the structure of the companies and which one owns which. It is so complex. These two guys here are the co-founders of Alden, Randall Smith and Heath Freeman here. Very private individuals, especially Randall Smith. Randall Smith is many things, but he's not a man who's ever shown an interest in protecting journalism. The founder of Alden Global Capital is known on Wall Street as the grandfather of vulture capitalism. He seeks out distressed businesses and plunders them.
Randall Smith is one of the early pioneers of this whole vulture hedge fund strategy. He has defined this ruthless industry.
In the 1980s, Wall Street was in the midst of a mergers and acquisitions frenzy.
Greed is good.
Investment bankers and ambitious stock traders were looking for new ways to take advantage of the increasingly complex financing of corporate America. Many were looking to find the hot new companies, the winners. But a young, up-and-coming trader named Randall Smith wondered, what if there was more money to be made from the losers?
Rick Goldsmith, the inspiration for you to make this film, you talk about Bill Moyers, a legendary journalist who passed away in June at the age of 91, and his involvement in getting you to do this?
Bill and I were talking about, I wanted to do a documentary on him, but which he wasn't having anyone. Who would want to see a documentary of me? Well, I think millions probably would have. But we decided we'd look for another issue to do a film on. And he called me one day and had seen this article about this hedge fund scarfing up newspapers and the journalists who were fighting back. And I think that was the main thing for me that hooked me, because these journalists were taking it upon themselves to not only look out for their own interests and through their guild, through their union, the News Guild, but also to educate the public about what was happening in your community with your newspapers, because everybody was noticing that the newspapers were getting thinner and thinner every month. But why was that happening? And that's what Julie Reynolds and others were uncovering. And out of that, this film was born. And we followed it for 5 years.
Rick, we just have 30 seconds. You really focus on Denver. You focus on Baltimore Sun. You focus on Oakland, where you are. The big picture here, how desperate do you feel about the loss of local media serving a democratic society?
Well, I think there's a plus and a minus. The minus is that this is happening all over the country, and more than half the daily newspapers are either owned or controlled by hedge funds. So that's the minus. The plus is that there, in every community, there are startups, there are new innovative ways to partner with, say, public radio and local news, digital news organizations.
Rick, we're going to have to leave it there. And people can get the rest of it in this really good documentary, Stripped for Parts, American Journalism on the Brink, now airing and streaming on PBS. Check your local stations. That does it for our show. I'll be in Santa Fe, New Mexico on October 17th. Check out our website, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Hi, we are your liars.
I'm Javin, and I play keyboards and sing in Young Pacific.
I'm Nathaniel. I play guitar and sing in Dead Soft.
Since moving to BC, I've been a huge fan of Emily Carr's art.
I wrote a lot of it on the road. That was our first real tour.
What role do you think time plays in transforming something into art?
We've arrived at sexual maturity as a band.
The Arts Show, every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. right here on CJSF 90.1 FM.